again to the Image Doctors. It's September 14th, 2006. I'm Jason O'Dell.
And I'm Rick Walker.
Thanks for joining us today as we delve once again into the world of photography with the Nikon system, amongst other things.
Yep, and in terms of today's topics, I think one of the primary things that we're going to discuss is sharpening.
And we've been getting a lot of requests for how do I sharpen.
Yeah, and it's a complex topic, and one of the reasons we haven't done it sooner is we have spent a fair amount of time over the last few months doing some research, thinking about it, and I think what we've concluded is it isn't a simple topic.
No, it's not. We've kind of been ducking the subject, and we both sharpen all the time, and we'd like to think that we're sharpening experts, but I'll tell you, every time I think I know what I'm doing, I find a new and better way of doing it and realize that I sharpened all my images less than ideally.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. You know, the other topics in terms of digital photography are a bit simpler. It's not hard to learn how to use levels well. That's pretty simple. Curves takes a little bit more time. Tweaking your white balance isn't too hard. But sharpening is a black art, I think.
Yep, it's right up there with convincing your spouse to let you buy a lens. It's really tough to do.
Yeah. So hopefully we won't make it worse when we talk about it in this podcast. We'll try to make it a little bit better and give you some good tips. One quick thing that we ought to do, first of all, is clarify something from the last podcast. We were talking about mirror lockup and the delay. And one error that we made was talking about the D70 as having that delay feature on the mirror. And it turns out it doesn't. That's one of the things that happens if you don't use a body a whole lot. You do make mistakes, so we do apologize. The D70 and D70S do not have that delay feature. So the key thing that you'll want to do if you're using those bodies, and I think this is true with the D50 as well, although I'm probably making a mistake there, is use that feature or that idea of dampening the motion of the camera by putting your hand on the lens or something like that.
Stick a beanbag on top of it.
Yeah, that can work too if you're using a shutter speed in that bad zone.
Yeah, or just more, or try to avoid that 1/15th of a second area.
If you can.
If you can. I mean, if it sometimes
practically, yeah, you can't always. So try the dampening approach.
That's right. And we had gotten some emails and questions, and there was some, I saw a similar post in the podcast feedback forum asking about this. So we apologize. We're not all knowing, all powerful, even though we wish we were. And we don't own every Nikon camera ever made either.
Close. Well,
I think Rick is close. Yeah, I certainly don't. Sometimes we don't always nail it, but we apologize if we confused anyone out there.
Yeah. Okay.
So let's talk about...
Moving on to another opportunity to confuse people and make errors. Sharpening.
That awful black art of sharpening.
Yeah. And we're going to talk a little bit about noise reduction, too, at the same time, although not in detail.
No, but the two are inherently linked, and I think it's important. Before we get into all the gory details of sharpening, this was not something you needed to worry about when you just took film pictures and brought them into the lab and had prints made. There was no need to sharpen anything. It was all an analog process. Where sharpening becomes an issue is with any kind of digitization of your image data.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter if you're doing film scanning, whether
right.
it's a flatbed or a film scanner, or if you're using a digital body, or if you're printing. There's sharpening that's required in all of those cases. Otherwise, you're just not going to get crisp, you know, results.
Right, and
look that good.
And the major culprit in all of this is the digital data, which is a regular array. It needs to be smoothed out a little bit to keep things like stair step patterns and jaggy edges from occurring. And oftentimes, you'll have something called an anti-aliasing filter, either in your scanner or also for sure on your digital SLR body in front of the sensor.
Right. That's
its job is to smooth out that image and keep it from looking sort of digitized.
It actually blurs it a little.
And so it does blur it. And what you need to do then, if nothing else, is to remove that effect.
Yeah. Now, there's one digital body I can think of that had, you know, Nikon mount that didn't have an anti-aliasing filter, and that was a Kodak body that was made
right.
a few years past.
Those SLRNs.
The 14N or something like that. So it didn't have one of those, but it had a lot of imaging issues of other types.
Right.
So.
But in general, sharpening is something that you must do. And we're going to talk about sharpening as a multi-stage process.
Mm-hmm.
So let's give you the overview of the steps, if you will, of how you should approach sharpening.
Yeah. Now, one really quick thing, and we're not going to delve a whole lot into it because we're going to talk mostly about sharpening as a post-processing step. But let's talk quickly about in-camera sharpening.
Right.
And if you're shooting in RAW mode, it doesn't matter a whole heck of a lot what you set in the camera because you can always change it later. And I think both of us leave our D2Xs set on high just because that way you get pretty sharp and crisp JPEGs and it's easy to zoom in on the LCD display and kind of see what's going
on. Yeah, it's for preview purposes.
But we don't really use that setting for anything downstream. Both of us, I think, override that, turn it off when we start doing raw processing and do alternate sharpening approaches. Now, if you're shooting just exclusively JPEGs, there's a question about do you use that or not? And if you're just using, just doing snapshots, things like that, you're not going to blow them up a whole heck of a lot. You're not going to worry a lot about what it's doing to noise. You can use the in-camera sharpening, and it's okay. It's not bad, and it's kind of quick and easy. Probably if you want to make those JPEGs into larger size print, you're going to want to turn off the in-camera sharpening.
Or leave it at something like low.
Yeah.
I find that depending on the camera you use, you have to experiment with this a little bit. The amount of sharpening that's applied in the camera seems to vary. And if you set it to, say, what they call normal, it doesn't look particularly sharpened. But that's good from a post-processing standpoint. It gives you some overhead into what you can do.
It's a pretty gentle level.
Right. And so even high isn't particularly aggressive. And in fact, if I have a JPEG where I've set it at high, if I leave it at that, it looks okay.
Yeah.
But I can do much better with it after the fact.
Yeah. The key thing is if you're really trying to do something more elaborate with your image, a large scale enlargement, or there's a risk of having to do a fair amount of tonal shifts and color saturation shifts, you don't want to bake in a whole lot of sharpening at the start.
So this is for JPEG shooters only,
because
that effect that you set on your camera in JPEG mode is permanent,
right?
And you can't get rid of it. So if you over sharpen there, you're putting yourself behind the eight ball.
Right.
You're not going to be able to undo that effect.
Yep. So key message with JPEGs is go on the conservative side if you're going to use in-camera sharpening.
Sounds good.
Okay, so let's shift over to the situation where you're using raw sharpening
or any kind of just general digital.
Yeah, let's generalize this out a little bit more first.
Let's just flesh this out a little bit. First thing is to understand the relationship between sharpening and noise reduction and what the two things are doing. I mean, sharpening sort of makes sense. It makes the image look sharper. And it's doing that by enhancing edge contrast.
Right.
And there's lots of ways to achieve that. We'll talk about that later. But that's what it's doing. It's making the image, it's enhancing the contrast between edges. That means that depending on your source, by source I mean if it's a film scan or a digital
capture,
you also are going to accentuate potentially things that you don't want to. So film grain or digital noise can be accentuated by sharpening. So while sharpening accentuates those edges, noise reduction is going to tend to blur your image. And that's why the two things are sort of the opposites of each other. The more noise reduction you apply, the less sharp your image looks. The more sharpening you apply, you have the potential of making your image look noisier and enhancing grain or digital noise. So the two go hand in hand. And as a general rule in our post-processing workflow, you have to decide whether the noise component is an issue. And if it is, you'll want to do your noise reduction step by whatever means you choose before you do any sharpening.
Right. And it should be an early step in the process. Do not wait until late, because then there are multiple ways that you can accentuate that noise. Like you can accentuate it via a levels adjustment.
Mm-hmm.
So noise reduction should be one of the very first things that you do on your image if you're going to do it. And like we mentioned earlier, we're not going to spend a whole lot of time on noise reduction. But one of the things to think about is how large a print are you going to make?
Right.
Don't just worry about how it looks at 100% magnification on your screen if it's in Photoshop or in Capture or some other RAW converter. That's probably overstating how bad it's going to look. When you actually put it on 8x10 or 13x19, it's probably less of an issue than you think.
Right.
But when noise typically is an issue with most Nikon cameras is when you get up into the ISO 800-ish
and above
situation. Below that, you're usually fine on a real print as opposed to the
right. You can still see
viewing.
It. I can see the noise at ISO 400, for example, if I turn noise reduction off.
Right.
But in practical terms, it becomes a very minor component once I print the picture.
Yeah, and oftentimes you can screw up something more by trying to get rid of that little bit of noise than you're benefiting.
So in our workflow, the way that Rick and I think we have the same approach to this, when we process a RAW file, we're going to turn off, especially a high ISO file, we're going to disable any sharpening or use very little sharpening at the RAW, in the early steps of the process, then apply the noise reduction if necessary.
Mm-hmm.
We'll do a lot of our other adjustments to color, contrast, etc. And then we're going to apply a sharpening step, which we're going to refer to from here on out as capture sharpening, to remove the effect of the anti-aliasing filter.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sound about right, the way we more or less do things?
Yeah, pretty close.
And it doesn't matter if you're doing, and we say capture sharpening. This is a term that comes up in a lot of the literature on sharpening. This has nothing to do with Nikon capture.
No.
Don't be confused by that. This is
one's capital C, one is little c.
Right.
We're talking
this is little c.
C. Yeah.
Little c, lowercase c.
Has digital capture sharpening or whatever.
And you'll see that term thrown around a lot. And that's what they're talking about. They're talking about doing an initial sharpening adjustment to reduce the effect of whatever the source of the digital image was, the anti-aliasing filter, your film scan. Okay, that's what you're going to do. From that point on, we'll talk about you may or may not need to do what we will call creative sharpening, which means things like if you want to accentuate certain parts of your image, or it depends on the kind of image that you have.
Could
really
be the eyes.
If you've got a portrait, you might not want to sharpen it.
Yeah.
But if you want to bring out feather detail, you might sharpen more. And then the last step is a fixed kind of sharpening setting, which is after you've sized your and possibly resampled your image for its final destination, the screen or an inkjet print at a particular size.
Or a specific kind of paper on your inkjet printer.
Yeah, matte paper versus glossy paper, or a Fuji, or what's the Frontier print, mm-hmm. versus, you know, continuous tone print versus an inkjet print versus a halftone print. You're going to need to sharpen to correct for softness generated by the printing process, by putting it on paper. And that's what we'll call output sharpening.
Right.
So no matter what your workflow is, whether it's a film scan or a digital capture, we believe in that three-stage process. Capture sharpening, creative sharpening if needed, and then final output sharpening.
Yeah. Now, especially in past years, there was a tendency just to go straight to, you know, in one step, toward output sharpening. And you can do that. I think the process that we're talking about here, and it's showing up in a lot of tools and books and stuff like that, is probably a little bit easier to deal with in some respects, I think, because the concept is you get your images in general, whether they're coming from film or different kinds of digital capture, to the same baseline. So they get to that same general level of sharpness and clarity. And then you vary your output settings depending on, you know, what kind of media you're going to end up going to in the end. And I just find it a little bit easier concept and a little bit easier to deal with than, you know, just going from 0 to 100.
Right. Absolutely. So let's walk you through a little. That's the overview of the sharpening routine. By doing it in multi-stage steps, another thing that I should point out is that you give yourself more control along the way to undo things later on, mm-hmm. especially if you do your sharpening in layers. If you work in Photoshop, if you sharpen layers instead of sharpening the background, you can't undo some of the sharpening steps unless you apply them to a layer. And that gives you a way to have an image and then apply different output sharpening settings, for example, to print at different sizes depending on what you do with that image. But you know that the baseline is correct. The basic image is the right sharpness, and then you're just adding on something depending on where you're sending it.
Yeah. There's a subtle psychological thing that comes into play here too, which is if you do the multi-stage sharpening that we were just talking about, once you've done your initial tweaks on the image and applied some capture sharpening to it, and then you save it, you've got something that looks good. And there's just something nice about that. It mm-hmm. looks sharp and clear. It doesn't look blurry like it does right out of the camera. And I think most people kind of like that too. And since it doesn't tend to screw up your final image, there's a nice psychological thing about it too. But that's kind of a moot point.
Yeah. So,
but I kind of like that.
So the approach to film scanning and digital capture, although overall they're very similar, there's some differences that we should point out. So let's walk you through film, and we're going to assume. Well, let's start with, we're going to assume you're scanning a piece of film, whether it's a negative or a color transparency. We're going to not assume for the moment that you're scanning a print on a flatbed scanner. First thing you have to ask yourself is, what kind of film am I using? And that means, is this a digital negative, which can look incredibly noisy or grainy when you scan them?
A digital negative, huh?
Or sorry, a film negative. Yeah, digital negative is something totally different. I should be banned from the program just because of saying that.
Yeah. We'll have to do another one of those mirror lockup.
Brain lockup, I think, is what I have engaged. So you ask yourself, am I scanning color negative film, color transparency film? Is this ISO 400 film, which may be grainy, or is it something like Velvia 50, which is going to have very low grain, or something like Provia 100, which has got almost no grain to speak of? Then whether you're using a flatbed scanner or a dedicated film scanner is also going to influence how your initial print or initial scan comes out.
And just to sort those things out, and we're not going to go into a huge amount of detail, we're going to spend a little bit more time on the digital process because that's just where more of our listeners are at this point. But the general things are, color negative film is going to be a lot grainier than color slide film in general, at equivalent types of ISOs. So you're going to have to do something to tone down that film grain. And some things are GEM, which you can find on some of the Nikon scanners, and some of the same tools that you can use for digital noise reduction, like Noise Ninja and Neat Image, and those are the two that we use. They're both good. We'll also work with film images too, so you can take out some of that film grain.
But you're going to need to blur out that film grain, and how much you blur it out will depend on not only the kind of film, but also the scanner.
Right. And in terms of scanner types, what that's going to influence more is the amount of sharpening that you use. Film scanners will typically require less sharpening than a flatbed. A flatbed, will need a lot.
Right.
In my experience.
They tend to be lower resolution.
Yeah.
They're just not dedicated for shooting, scanning film.
No, there can be a fair difference in quality between the two, and flatbeds will just mostly require more sharpening.
So that noise reduction / blur step, if you want to think of it that way, will be a lot more prominent with any kind of film scan than with a typical digital capture.
Mm-hmm.
You'll just probably find yourself needing to do some work to get rid of that.
Yeah.
To get rid of some of that grain. After you've done that, you'll want to run your capture sharpening routine like we talked about before. Do whatever creative sharpening and then set the output.
Yeah.
On the other hand, if you're doing a digital capture, what you really need to evaluate is mostly just the kind of camera that you're using and the ISO that you're shooting at.
Right.
And that will determine whether or not you need to apply noise reduction, if at all.
Right.
Before you sharpen.
And as an example, if I'm shooting at ISO 100 or 200 and even 400 a lot of the time, I won't do anything in the way of noise reduction. It's definitely not needed at 100. And at 400, I often find myself preferring a little bit of noise, but I get the benefit of no loss in clarity or detail.
Right, because remember, when you reduce noise, you are also blurring your image. So right. You have to, those two processes are going to work opposite each other.
Yeah, so for me, it's when I get above 400 that I start using a little bit.
Now, the one exception I could say for that is even if you're shooting at, say, ISO 200, if you've underexposed and you're bringing out a lot of shadow detail, you will then see noise that wasn't apparent.
Mm-hmm.
The noise is always there in your image. It's just whether or not you can see it.
Right.
And sometimes you might find yourself adding a little bit of noise reduction if you've done that kind of image.
Right.
But the trick is, if you got your exposure more or less correct the first time around, you may not even need to do that step.
So after having done that, you know what you want to do is any large scale changes in tonal stuff or color saturation or stuff like that. If you're using RAW, you're doing this in your RAW converter. If you're working with a JPEG, you're probably using something like Photoshop or something like that to do those large scale things. And then after that is when you can start doing the capture sharpening, because you've done those gross edits. Now, let's start talking a little bit about the tools that you use in the settings. And this stuff applies in a lot of cases to the film stuff as well.
Right, because these are universal tools.
Right.
And we're assuming that you're going to be using either, you're going to be doing your capture sharpening either in the RAW converter or in Photoshop.
Mm-hmm.
And in most cases, many of the RAW converters on the market will have tools that are either called the exact same thing as ones in Photoshop and work the same way, or will be pretty close.
Mm-hmm.
One exception of the sharpening tools is ACR. It just sort of has a generic sharpen slider, if I'm correct.
Well, and there's some other converters that have similar things. It's the one in ACR isn't quite as simple as it looks. One of the things that's discussed a lot of times with sharpening is, is it in the luminosity channel or not?
And right.
Luminosity
we'll
channel stuff
is
considered to be a little bit better, and I'll let you talk about the details. But with ACR, it does sharpen in the luminosity channel. And although it's one slider, it's better than you think it would be. It's got some pretty good algorithms behind it that are camera-specific and stuff. But you won't see a whole lot in the way
you don't get the traditional tool.
No.
Like you might see once you bring your image into Photoshop, say, you then have access to all of the filters and all of the tools.
Right.
So, but we're at that point.
But for a lot of images, it's not bad.
Yeah.
It's got a default of 25. That's what it starts at independent of the camera. It actually is camera specific, but you can't tell. But
you just have to remember that that's a sharpening step, and that would be what we would call a capture sharpening step, because you're doing that on the initial raw data that's coming into the thing. The most frequently used tool or filter, whatever you want to call it, piece of software for sharpening is the unsharp mask filter.
Yeah.
Would you agree?
Yeah.
Which has the stupidest name ever.
Seemingly.
But we want to give you a little historical perspective on that.
But it does always make people wonder, why, if I'm wanting to sharpen something, would I use a thing called unsharp mask?
Exactly. And I'll tell you, I stayed away from this filter for a really long time, thinking that it was going to somehow blur my images when I first had Photoshop way back in the dark ages. But unsharp mask historically refers to a process for sharpening an analog print, a traditional print, especially for things like newspapers, where they're making an enlargement and you wanted to sharpen the edges. And what they would do, all sharpening methods, no matter what tool we use, they are methods of increasing edge contrast. That's a pretty fair blanket statement. Mm-hmm. You're increasing the contrasted edges, which makes our eyes perceive them as being a sharper edge. Mm-hmm. To produce a sharp edge and increase edge contrast in the old days, they would make a slightly out of focus transparency, like a negative, and sandwich it between a piece of glass and the original sharp image. So that slightly out of focus image would be a mask, and it was unsharp, it was blurry. But when you projected through the piece of paper, through the or through the piece of glass, through this sandwiched thing in the enlarger, the result of the blurred mask, which wasn't in focus, projecting down on your final output, your piece of photographic paper or whatever, would accentuate the edge contrast. The interaction between the sharp image and the slightly blurry image would create this perception that there was a higher contrast edge.
Right.
That's all it's doing. So Photoshop, when it's doing this USM or unsharp mask, it's doing digitally the same kind of thing that used to be done in a traditional darkroom.
Right. And the unsharp mask feature is always a nice place to start in terms of sharpening, because what it does is very fundamental to the other approaches as well. They're all doing variations off of it. And let's talk about the three parameters that you have with unsharp mask in Photoshop.
Right. So when you open up that unsharp, right, in Photoshop, you go to filter, sharpen, and then you get a bunch of choices. Stay away from everything except for everything that says sharpen or sharpen more.
We don't even
use those. Just go to the one that says unsharp mask.
Right.
And when you open that up, you get a dialog box with three sliders, right?
Mm-hmm. And the first one allows you to change the amount of sharpening. Now, one thing that is confusing a lot of cases is it's got a very large scale. You can go from 0 to, I think, 500.
Right. 0 to 500%.
Yeah. And those high amounts seem like they should be too much. Seems like, you know, 100 should be enough.
Right. Right. If that's 100%, how much more do you need, right?
Right. And the other stuff seems like it would be too high. And
the answer is not.
It depends. And you generally want to get over that kind of psychological thing. But there is a reason why people are a little bit reluctant to do that, and that's because there is a lot of bad sharpening out there.
Right. And
it's
before
amazing.
You talk about good sharpening,
yeah,
you need to know what bad sharpening is, right?
And this is the stuff that, especially in years past, would make people complain about digital prints. And they would see it and they go, oh, well, that's a digital print, and I don't like it. And usually the reason why was that sharpening was done poorly. And I have to admit, I did that a lot.
And what we mean is usually over-sharpening.
Yeah.
It's not because they were too soft. It was because they were too sharp.
Mm-hmm. And you can find it all over the place. You can even see it in National Geographic magazine.
In fact, the cover of the most recent National Geographic magazine with an issue of China, if you guys get National Geographic, pull out that issue and look at the picture of the statue on the color and look at the edge, and you're going to see the telltale sign of over-sharpening,
right,
which is something called a halo.
Right, and that's actually the second parameter in the unsharp mask function.
The radius.
Yeah.
So think of a mount, before we get into all that, I like to think of a mount as the volume knob.
Mm-hmm.
It controls overall the intensity or the volume of which the next two settings are applied.
Right.
The next setting in the box is called the radius setting. Mm-hmm. And this gives you a pixel diameter between adjacent pixels of how much the distance between, if you have two pixels next to each other, one light, one dark, what an unsharp mask is going to do is it's going to accentuate the light-dark difference. It's going to make the one on one side darker. It's going to make the one on the other side lighter. If you spread that out too far and use too high of an amount, what you see is these white halos. That's because the light area that you made lighter has extended too far into your image.
Yeah. And what you want to have is you want to have a little halo.
You need to have a little bit.
Because that's what
gives you the effect.
Yeah, exactly. But the key thing is to get it down to the point where it's not obvious.
You want it not noticeable at the print size or at the,
right,
you know, wherever you're looking
so
at the picture.
You're juggling those two first parameters, the overall amount of the sharpening, and that halo size to give something that looks crisp, but there is no obvious halo when you're looking at an image on a screen or on a print.
So if you play around with this, fix what, you know, it's tough to solve a three-body problem. So if you set the amount at, let's say, 100%, and now vary the look at your image at 100% and then move the slider for radius up and down, what you'll see is that halo of, you know, that effect
bigger
starts to
or smaller
across high contrast edges.
Yeah.
And
a general rule is that if you're using a really high amount, you know, that first parameter, then you'll want to use a smaller radius.
Right.
And that kind of approach, you know, the really large amount like 300 or 350 or, you know, don't be surprised by those amounts. Those can be absolutely fine and appropriate if you're not using a large radius.
Right.
And by not using a large radius, what we're talking about is something that's like 1 or 0.8 or 0.6 or something in that.
It's okay to use a radius of, in fact, in most cases for capture sharpening, you're going to use a radius of somewhere between 1 pixel or to maybe less.
Yeah.
A radius of 1 to maybe even 0.8.
And this is for photos that have a lot of detail in them. Landscape shots that have a lot of detail benefit from the really large amount of sharpening and the very small radius.
Right.
That looks good.
This method, that high amount and a small radius, so an amount of 300 and a radius of 0.8, will bring out fine details.
Right.
But it'll also bring out noise.
Yeah.
It'll also bring out...
Because
these are fine details.
Right.
So then the last control that you can use is the final slider, is something called threshold. Mm-hmm. And this is in terms of levels of tonality between 0 and 255. Mm-hmm. So that your slider will start at 0 at the left and go all the way to 255. And what this tells the unsharp mask routine is to, when it's evaluating adjacent pixels, it will decide whether or not to apply the effect to adjacent pixels if the contrast between the tonal value of the one and the other exceeds whatever threshold that you set.
Right.
So if your threshold is 0,
everything gets sharp.
Everything is sharp in every pixel, because any unless they have the exact same tonal value, they are viewed as being different and there will be a contrast applied to them.
Right. So if you think about that in terms of noise, which is a pretty small scale kind of thing, it's just going to accentuate all the noise. So what you want to do with that last parameter is vary it depending on how noisy your image is. Mm-hmm. And if you're shooting with a low ISO, something like 100, you can go pretty low. You could even do 0 if you want. Normally I do something like 2 or 4 or something like that. And that turns out pretty good. When you get higher ISOs, especially if you haven't applied any noise reduction, then you want to increase that. For an ISO 400 image, you might want to go up to something like 6 or 8. You can just play around a little bit with it. Now, we were talking about high amounts of sharpening and low radii.
Oh, well, I know where you're going, but I want to interject here for a second, because 99% of the sharpening that you're going to do, especially for capture sharpening, which is what we're talking about right now, the initial sharpening step, you're going to want to do this method of fairly high amount, something over 100%. A good place to start would be something, if you're in Photoshop, maybe around 200 or even 250%.
Mm-hmm.
A radius of around 1 pixel.
Mm-hmm.
Part of this is going to depend on your camera, because the higher megapixel cameras, you might be able to use a slightly higher amount or higher radius and have the same effect. But as a starting point, something like 250 for amount, a radius of, let's say, 1 pixel, and a threshold of 4 levels is a pretty safe place to start for Photoshop. If you want to do this if you're using Nikon Capture, the biggest issue with Nikon Capture is that it uses a different scale. It's the same.
And here's
USM.
The big tip for
and,
capture.
And here's
users.
Our hint of the day.
Yeah. Think of five.
The number is five. Five is the number of the counting.
And the number you shall remember is five.
And not six.
Nor
not
four.
Unless proceeding. And three is right out.
Right.
Okay.
All right. Enough of that.
Okay. It's much too
here's
silly.
Here's what we mean. That first parameter, which in Photoshop goes from 0 to 500, the equivalent in Capture goes from 0 to 100.
So
to get the same amount, it's a factor of 5.
Right. So if you have a setting of 100% in Nikon Capture's Unsharp Mask tool,
that's 500.
That's 500%. So a setting of 20% in Nikon Capture would be 100% in Photoshop.
Mm-hmm.
That's equivalent.
Mm-hmm.
The radius setting is also a factor of 5.
Mm-hmm.
We got this from the Nikon Europe website.
The only place it seems to be out there.
It seems to be out there on there in their FAQ section. So you guys in Europe, you're lucky to have that database. But you can go and find it online.
Everyone can get to it.
Everyone can get to it. It's free. It's on the web. The radius setting is also a factor of 5. So if you see a 5%, you divide that by 5 to get pixels. So 5% radius in Nikon Capture or Capture NX is 1 pixel.
Right.
So that's the threshold is exactly the same for both 0 to 255.
There's no difference,
there's
on
no
that
difference
scale.
There. So a recommended starting point, for example, for Nikon capture sharpening is something like an amount of 50%, a radius of 5%, and a threshold of 4.
Mm-hmm. And if you're using a lower resolution camera, like a 6 megapixel camera or a 4 megapixel camera, you might want to drop that intermediate value, the halo or the radius, down to maybe 4 or something like that.
Yeah, it works.
You know, get in the zone, you're fine.
Now, that's one way of doing it. And I also want to, we were talking about the threshold. I want to bring in another important point.
Uh-huh.
We were talking about turning off the in-camera sharpening. Now that we've explained what USM is doing,
mm-hmm.
we can tell you what the in-camera sharpening is doing.
Good point.
It is using essentially a threshold of 0.
Right.
So just when Rick said the 0 threshold will accentuate all your noise, so too will the in-camera sharpening if it's set to high. So we prefer to turn that off in our raw converter. So if you're using something like Nikon Capture, you can set the in-camera sharpening to none. If you're using another third-party, it's not going to matter because it won't read that.
It'll use its default.
But it'll set to its default. We turn it off in our camera once we bring it into the computer to remove that 0 threshold kind of sharpening. And then we do our capture sharpening using Unsharp Mask or whatever, or its equivalent in whatever software we might be using.
Yeah.
Because we can set that threshold.
Yeah.
If you've got a noisier image, you'll want to increase the threshold to maybe 8 or 10 levels.
Right.
To avoid sharpening those subtle differences with the noise.
Now the
and that
other,
brings us to that other
exactly.
technique.
We're going to loop back to what we started to talk about. And there are, you know, we were talking about what approach you might use for a landscape shot, and that'll usually work well for wildlife or travel or a bunch of things like that where you're shooting scenery or subjects that aren't people. Now,
hint, not people.
Yeah, not people. And not your wife.
Especially not your wife.
What you want to do with photos of people is you typically don't want to accentuate really small details.
And by photos of people, we mean like close-up portraits.
Right.
You know, head and shoulder shots.
Exactly.
Headshots.
Yeah, portraiture. You don't want to accentuate those small details. You want to have the overall image look sharp and crisp, but not every little pore on the face
right.
Being accentuated. So what you want to do there is a different approach on sharpening, and there you use a smaller amount on the first value, if you're in Photoshop, less than 100,
mm-hmm.
and increase the size of the radius.
And how much you increase it really depends.
Yeah.
But I would say, no question, use a lower amount.
Yeah.
And then as you increase the radius, what starts to happen, and you can do this, if you go into Photoshop, bring up an image, go into your Unsharp Mask, set the amount at, say, 70%,
mm-hmm.
and then move that radius slider around.
Yeah.
And what you're going to see is that not only does it sharpen the edges, but it tends to adjust the contrast of the image too.
And it's kind of a useful little trick for images where you want to increase the contrast level up a little bit. In this case, you only don't even think of it as a sharpening thing. It's more
right.
of a,
it's a contrast adjustment.
It's great for removing haze or reducing haze mm-hmm. in an image.
But contrast, as we said, is related to sharpening.
Yeah.
So you get a sharpening effect even though you're
right.
playing with the contrast.
And because that first amount is lower, the halos aren't really obvious. And so it kind of works. But it works well for portraiture and haze reduction in images or ones where you just want to add a little bit of snap
right.
to the overall image.
And it was said best, we've got a nice little, if you're really interested in doing fancy sharpening
yeah.
and really doing it in a way where you're using layers and you're not even necessarily using these unsharp masks, you can do sharpening, like we said, by doing layers and blending. It gets really complicated. There's a good book out by Bruce Fraser, Real World Image Sharpening with Adobe Photoshop. CS2 is the
brand
latest
new,
one.
Published in 2006.
You know, it's Adobe Press. He talks about all kinds of techniques.
More than you'll want to know, but it's useful.
Yeah, it can hurt your head. But think of it this way. If you use a high amount, low radius, you're bringing out fine detail. If you use a low amount and a higher radius, you're sort of bringing out the overall shape. You're accentuating shapes, cheekbones and eyebrows and things, rather than pores. And so
right.
that's why for close-up portraits, especially of your wife, you don't want to accentuate every single blemish and pore, but you do want to have a sharp image.
Mm-hmm.
So we would recommend that other kind of amount.
Okay. So what next?
Well, that's the main tool in Photoshop. We should point out that we want to talk about two things. One is destructive versus non-destructive editing. If you do your sharpening in Photoshop and you do it on your background layer and once you click OK, that effect is baked in. A lot of approach in Photoshop these days is to make adjustments in adjustment layers so that you can go back and undo them at later times. One thing that's in this image sharpening book that we talked about is how to do your sharpening in layers so that you can go back and undo those effects at later times. You're never touching the background, the bottommost layer of your image. That's important because if you over sharpen and it's baked in, it's almost impossible to undo the effect of that filter.
Right.
So that's one thing to keep in mind. The other thing we should talk about a little bit is something that a lot of people ask about is called luminosity sharpening. And that's when you apply the sharpening effect to the what's called the luminosity channel and not the color data. So you can think of the luminosity channel of kind of like being the tonality of your image, the black and white, almost a grayscale representation of your image. And there's a way of doing that. If you apply, say, an unsharp mask filter in Photoshop, if right immediately after you apply this effect, and it has to be done in this order, you can't do something else and go back to it. Immediately after you apply the USM, if you go up to, in Photoshop, you go up to the, which one is it? I believe it's the edit menu. And there's this item under the edit menu called fade. And so you do your unsharp mask, and then you go edit, and it'll say fade unsharp mask because it's always the last filter that you applied. You click that, and then you get a little slider bar where it says opacity and mode. And what you want to do is change. You click the mode pull down and change that to the very last item on the list is luminosity, and then you click OK. You can use the opacity to reduce the intensity of your effect as well. So sometimes people recommend setting it to, say, 70%. But what this does is that it effectively applies this sharpening to just the luminosity data and not the color data. Now, Rick, why is that important?
Well, it's important because at this point, everyone listening to us is now starting to think about, what am I having for dinner tonight?
Yeah, really.
it does get deep.
Yeah, it
but
does get
the
deep.
The reason it's important has to do with
those halos again
mm-hmm.
and the color shifts that occur in them.
Right.
And by applying your sharpening to the, because again, a sharpening move is adjusting contrast, and in RGB data, when you're messing with that, it has the potential of creating a color shift at those edge boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
By applying this in the luminosity, you're not in theory, you're not affecting any of the color data.
Yeah.
And that.
So the key thing there is just associate luminosity channel with good sharpening.
And there's other ways of doing this too, but we're not going to go into. There's all kinds of other stuff.
Beat it to death. That's for sure.
There's one other tool in Photoshop that you might use. That's called Smart Sharpen.
Smart Sharpen.
Yep. Yeah. Maxwell Smart Sharpen.
Yep.
I missed it by that much. and then that one only has two sliders. There's an amount, and then there's a, let me pull it up here on my computer. There's an amount setting, and then there is a radius setting. And it's the same idea as before, but it's going to do its threshold sort of in a different manner. And what we recommend with this one is there's an option if you click the advanced button, bring up the advanced tab in the sharpen window that has an option to remove something, and it by default says a little tab says Gaussian blur. You're going to want to change that to say lens blur. We find that works the best.
Mm-hmm. And then one nice thing about smart sharpening is that it allows you to tweak the amount of sharpening in both the shadow area as well as the highlight area.
Right.
And the shadow area is where more of your noise problems are.
Yeah.
You know, those areas that aren't quite black. And
so by fading that more selectively, you can mitigate some of the effect of noise.
Yeah. So that's a quickie on Smart Sharpen.
And it takes longer to process. It's more processor intensive than the regular unsharp mask.
Yeah. So let's jump ahead to output sharpening. We'll just briefly mention creative sharpening.
Let me mention one other thing.
Okay.
We talked about the luminosity sharpening and why that was supposed to be better. One thing of note, a lot of the RAW converters, Nikon Capture being a prominent example, you mentioned Adobe Camera Raw, they do their unsharp mask setting in the luminosity channel for you by default.
Yeah, and I know Bibble does that.
Does that too.
I'm not sure about some of the others. I suspect a lot of.
So anything you do if you happen to use Nikon Capture or Bibble, when you use the unsharp mask tool, it applies it to the luminosity channel for you. You don't have to go through all that extra steps.
Right.
So it's just a nice thing.
Mm-hmm.
But let's talk about output sharpening.
We skipped over creative.
Oh, creative sharpening.
Yeah.
Well,
we won't talk much about that.
That's that other thing.
Yeah. And I guess we won't dwell on it too much, but to say with a lot of these tools, there are ways of putting in selective sharpening, often with brushes or things of that sort.
Or in a layer.
And
have to do it in a layer most of the time.
Generally, when I use that is on eyes of either people or birds or animals.
So what we're talking about is sharpening just certain parts of your image.
Really small parts.
So it requires you to be familiar with selection tools and masks and that kind of thing.
It gets tricky, but it can be a nice little touch. And what I would recommend is just, we'll talk about tools that you can use later. Look for those kind of settings there.
It's discussed in this book,
In the book.
How you can make a sharpening brush.
But it is something that you can do as an intermediate sort of sharpening.
I find 99% of the time, by just tweaking my capture sharpening settings a little bit, I can get output that's happy for the kind of picture.
Yep.
I mean, you have to evaluate the kind of picture of, do I want to bring out lots of fine detail, feathers and fur, or landscapes, or do I want to just accentuate shape?
Right. So, output sharpening.
That's the mysterious one. But it could be, in theory, a fixed setting that is tailored to a particular printer and a particular media.
Right. Like matte paper requires more sharpening than glossy paper. It just has to do with what happens with the inks and how they spread out, stuff like that. And you'll also see some variation with print size as well. Mm-hmm. Now, the book that we were referencing earlier, Bruce Fraser's book, talks about some suggested approaches for sharpening at the output stage for printing.
Right, and it's all done in layers.
It's very fancy.
Mm-hmm.
You want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, it's a sort of a two-stage process in which you create a layer from your background layer. So now you've duplicated that layer. And then you apply an unsharp mask filter with a fairly strong setting. Mm-hmm. These are the settings for a typical 300 DPI inkjet print on glossy paper.
And this assumes you've already done that capture sharpening stage.
Right. We are assuming that your image, by the time you get to output sharpening, let me step back for a second, your image should look good at its native resolution, whatever came out of the scanner or the camera.
Yeah, when you look at this point, at 100% or so, it should look
good.
Crisp.
At this point, you may have resized your image. Maybe now you're going to enlarge it or shrink it or do whatever you've done, and possibly even resampled the image. Maybe you've done that. This output sharpening is independent of content of your image. This is the final step that you're putting on. It only has to do with the place you're sending it to, the kind of printer in the paper.
Or the web.
Mm-hmm. And that's a lot easier. To do, because then you're just looking at it on the screen.
Right.
But for output sharpening, the recommendation is to create this new layer from the a copy of the background layer, apply an unsharp mask filter to it, and then fade it in the luminosity channel to 70%. Do that fade edit. Do edit fade unsharp mask. And the recommended setting was something like, I've already lost the page. 300 and something percent,
right.
A radius of 0.6, and 4 levels. Let me see if I can pull that page up. It's in the book here somewhere, but we'll post that online somewhere.
Yeah.
You fade that to 70% in the luminosity channel. Then, working in that same layer, you go under filter, and I think it's under other. There's a filter called high pass. It's a funky filter.
Mm-hmm.
And if you just use it by yourself, you set the radius to 2 pixels. And when you do that, it's going to turn gray. It's going to look really weird. But then what you do is in your layers palette in Photoshop, you set the blending mode to overlay. And you reduce the opacity of that layer to about 50%. It's going to look somewhat over-sharpened at this point, especially if you're viewing at 100%.
Mm-hmm.
Don't worry about that. That's your stock setting, and you print to that, and it should look pretty darn good on your inkjet print. This is all very confusing, isn't it, Rick?
It is. And you know what my answer is?
There's an easier way, isn't there?
I buy a tool.
When in doubt, buy a tool.
Because
that's right.
It's just a lot of stuff to deal with.
Because it's the job of us as the image doctors to lower your bank accounts.
Yes, and we're going to do it again. There's some good tools out here. What I actually do for my own sharpening is I go down one of two paths for a certain image. If it's a low ISO kind of shot, 100 or 200, I use Capture for most of my RAW conversions. And what I will do is use the USM sharpening in there. Once I've done all my tweaks on color balance and the tonal stuff and all that kind of good stuff, and I'll usually do 55.4 or 55.54 if it's more of a landscape shot with a lot of details.
So that's your unsharp mask settings.
Yeah,
and that's for
Nikon. And that's
capture.
For capture, and that works fine. If it's a higher ISO type of shot, I won't sharpen in capture generally. I'll save it unsharpened, then I'll use Noise Ninja on it. And then what I'll do...
So then you've outputted a TIFF and opened it in Photoshop, and now you're going to run your...
And then what I'll do is I'll use a tool.
Okay.
And the tools that I like best are the ones that have this multi-stage sharpening approach. And a couple examples of those would be PhotoKit Sharpener, made by an outfit called Pixel Genius. Or Nick, N-I-K, the same company Capture NX, that is, has a tool called Nick Sharpener Pro. And the one I use is the inkjet version. And it does similar things to PhotoKit. And both of them will allow you to very quickly and easily do capture sharpening, if you want to do it that way, as well as output sharpening. And the output sharpening allows you to specify, are you going to the web? Are you going to a printer? If you're going to a printer, is it glossy or matte paper?
Right.
What's the resolution? All those kind of things. And you just tell it that kind of information, and it figures out all the good stuff.
And it does it in layers.
And so both of them will allow you to change the sharpening via brushes, do creative sharpening or hold sharpening back in a sky where you don't want to accentuate noise. And they both work very well. They're not cheap. The
the we'll prices. Put links to the websites on our show page. How about that?
Yeah.
You can check it out for yourself.
But I'll tell you, they sure make it a lot nicer and easier. So
the one thing that
there's,
we didn't...
There's the impact to your bank account for this show.
Right. I guess I'll leave with one thing. We talked about all this output sharpening for print. What about for when you're posting in the Nikonians forums? If you're a silver or higher member, you can post images directly in your, or you know, or on your gallery or whatever you want to do. At this point, you've really downsized your image.
Mm-hmm.
You've downsampled it to whatever the posting limit is, like 800 pixels on the widest side, and it's going to be 72 DPI possibly or something like that for screen resolution.
Yeah.
How do you avoid those ugly halos? What's a good setting to use?
Well, the key is if you've done capture sharpening on it already, you don't need a whole lot of sharpening.
No.
You want to use a fairly low amount. You know, definitely if you're in Photoshop,
less than 100%.
Less than 100 for sure.
And
more
a teeny tiny radius.
And a teeny tiny
like
radius.
0.3.
Yes. We're thinking exactly the same. And we didn't talk about this in advance. Those tend to be good settings.
And a threshold of, again, around 4 or 5 levels, probably somewhere in there would be fine. But that kind of setting, like a 50.34 in Photoshop, 50%.
Just a smidge of sharpening.
And that's all you need. Because if you do that 100% stuff or higher, like we were talking about before, that's going to just give you this horrendously looking image that's no good. And no one wants to be accused of, gosh, your picture is nice, but it looks a little over-sharpened. How many times do you see that in the forums?
Oh, yeah.
So that's what I think.
All right.
So we will, our to-do list is we're going to put on our show notes page some useful links. We'll include some information about those USM settings in Photoshop and their how to translate it if you're using Nikon Capture or Capture NX, along with links to some other websites where you can find more information like the Nik Sharpener and the PhotoKit Sharpener and other resources that we find online. So go to the show notes page, which is at podcasts.nikonians.org, and click on the Image Doctor's show notes page. If you're downloading this from iTunes, don't forget we do have that page there with this information. And as always, we want to hear from you, so send us an email with whatever we screwed up this week to talkradio@nikonians.org, and we'll be back in 2 weeks with more stuff.
Yeah, but we did it. We did get through the sharpening thing.
And even if so, I'm still convinced it's
a
black art.
Yeah, it is. It is a complex one.
You just got to stick with it.
All right.
Until next time, this is the Image Doctors wishing you all the best for your photography.
All right. Bye-bye.